Blog Talk Radio.
Five Lincoln 103,
Lincoln 102. Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911 on the Tibbet 400 lower level near Carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and Brown.
484 suspect, the female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue G, no further.
Control, high Frank, 401 is a route.
Good evening and welcome to the Private Officer Beat Radio Show. Glad that you are with us on this, the fifth day of May, 2014. I'm your host, Rick McCann, founder and CEO of Private Officer International, and we're just really glad tonight that we're able to sit down. We've had a long couple of weeks, travel, the flu, just everything you can imagine happening here, bad weather. And so tonight we have really an interesting show. We've talked about this topic in the past, but we've never explored it completely in the way that we're going to tonight. And so tonight the topic for our program is going to be insurance. We'll be talking about workers' comp insurance, general liability insurance, professional insurance. What limits do we need? Do we even need that type of insurance? Why do we need it? And we'll be talking about the process of getting insurance from A to Z, from the moment that you put that application in to the moment that you actually get a proposal and you get approved. There's a lot of different processes and ingredients that go into this insurance deal, and I don't really think people understand or even realize how it works. So tonight I've invited a guest to be with us here shortly on the program. We'll be talking about all the ins and outs and how you can help get a lower premium just by the design of your website, and also how to fill out the application so that it doesn't set off alarms when people go to look at it to underwrite that particular policy. And we'll be talking more about that coming up. And if you are in the market for insurance, well, we've got just the right folks for you to talk with. The Varney Insurance Group, they do excellent work for those of us in the security industry. So if you are a private security agency, a contract security agency, or an alarm business, or a PI, and you need general liability or workers' comp, definitely give them a call today at area code 813-245-2675. Again, that area code is 813-245-2675, or check them out online at www.onguardins.com. My friends over there will be sure to help you out. They've got some of the lowest rates and some of the lowest down payments in the industry, and I'm sure that they'll be happy to help you out today. Check them out at www.onguardins.com. Also, if you are involved in sports security and you're interested in moving up the ladder, and that's really becoming a part of the profession that is growing because, well, not only with professional teams, but collegiate teams and high school teams, semi-pros, local sporting teams, they all have their own security staff these days, or risk management or security management. And so our friends over at the University of Southern Mississippi, they have an online sports security management certificate program that they're offering right now. I'm sure that you'll want to check them out at usm.edu/training. usm.edu/training. That's the University of Southern Mississippi's Sports Security Management Program, and I'll tell you what, I've looked at it. It's quite detailed, and if I was involved in that area of the profession, I would definitely take that program myself. Again, that is for the sports security area of the profession, and if you're involved or if you're interested in becoming involved in that area, definitely consider taking their course at usm.edu/training. Also, our friends over at the Maritime Security Academy, they are, again, offering maritime security certification. It's an online course. Check them out at the Maritime Security Academy if you're interested in becoming a maritime security professional. We are happy to oblige to our friends in advertising. If you're interested in advertising your product, your services with us, there are many different formats that we include all under one price. So if you're interested in advertising to our hundreds of thousands of subscribers and followers, just send us an email to helpdesk@privateofficer.com. For one low monthly rate, your advertisement will be included in our newsletters, our blogs, our radio shows, our website, advertisements, all areas that we use, including social media. So for more information, just send us an email at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. helpdesk@privateofficer.com. We certainly are very interested in continuing our relationships with the various companies that do business with security agencies and public safety and law enforcement. And so we also would be happy to discuss with you on some type of swap or barter. We've done that before, so if you're interested in that, just let us know at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. helpdesk@privateofficer.com. I don't know where you're at, but today was pretty hot and steamy here in the southeast, and it went quickly from spring to summer, just like fall to winter, and it's just been a crazy year. 90 degrees. And it's going to be like that for the next 4 or 5 days. So if you're working out there in the security public safety industry and you're on foot patrol or mobile patrol, make sure that you stay hydrated. You know, this is something that we remind everyone around June, July, August. But, you know, it's already, steaming up in many parts of the southeast. So I heard that out in Oklahoma City, I believe it was around 93 today. So definitely in the Midwest and Southeast already, to the point where we need to consider hydrating frequently, staying in the shade, and making sure that we are cool and that we stay safe. So just heads up there, heads up. Lots to talk about. We have a lot of things in the news, as always. Someone asked about a month ago, I guess, are the number of security officer deaths down? It seems like they're down. I think we have about 27 or 28 so far this year, something like that. That would come out to probably about close to six a month. No, they're not really down. The shootings are still there. The assaults are still there. The violence is still there. But usually there are slow periods during the year. There are times when there are many assaults, but thankfully not deaths. And that's kind of where we're at right now. We're kind of in a lull, but we are crossing into the summer months. Those are the very busy months. A lot of activity, a lot of action, for the private security and law enforcement officers. And so, you know, unfortunately, I don't foresee that this is going to stay status quo for much longer. I'm sure that there'll be, you know, continued violence resulting in deaths. That's just kind of the nature of our business. There has been an increase, actually, of assaults, especially with serious bodily injury. But as was pointed out in a recent conference that I was involved in, the EMS industry, the doctors, the surgeons, the paramedics, we are doing a much better job at saving people's lives. People are being injured severely and critically, but fortunately here in the U.S. we have A-plus EMS system, and that EMS service begins long before the patient arrives to the hospital, and so oftentimes the paramedic is able to begin that immediate life-saving step in the field, and that really makes a difference as to whether or not that person lives or dies. And so in our profession, there are many who are being stabbed and shot and run over, but thankfully our medical community is keeping us alive and preventing that death number from being put up on the board. And so really that's where we're at. And it was noted last week at a convention, a conference that I went to, a similar comment made by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. You know, he sees it across the country where he goes. He knows the effect of great medical care, what it's having on the number of deaths of police officers. It's not that there's less incidents, but there's better medical service being provided and thankfully saving more people now than ever before. And that's all because we have great medical services here in the U.S., unlike many other countries. And so that's part of the reason why the numbers seem to be down. We have, today is Cinco de Mayo Day. You know, Cinco de Mayo is a celebration in Mexico. It was a war that they won against, I believe it was France, French soldiers. And we've taken that as a party day here in the U.S., and this is going to be one of those days where there's going to be a lot of security interaction with the drunks and with people creating disturbances in apartments and nightclubs. And so, you know, this is one of those days when those numbers, you know, might change because security officers are usually there firsthand. That was the case a few days ago in Kennesaw, Georgia. That's just outside north of Atlanta, and where a security officer was shot in the chest at the FedEx distribution center by a armed suspect who came through the doors. The security officer was unarmed. He had no way of protecting himself or others. And again, something that Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman and myself spoke about last week is that security is pretty much on the scene 9 times out of 10 before law enforcement. And security officers, even in his view, they do a pretty good job at holding the line and apprehending suspects and taking people down and preventing disasters. But unfortunately, they're handcuffed because they're not given the right tools or the right equipment or the firearm to defend themselves against not the active shooter, but the active killer, because that's who these people are. They're killers. They are wanting to do only one thing, and that's to kill as many people as they can, gain attention before committing suicide to themselves. And, you know, we're not equipping our men and women out there. We're not training them. We're not giving them the assessment information and tools. We're not giving them the firearm training or the firearm tool to take care of business. And, you know, it's really disheartening when you know that you've got somebody who is basically naked trying to do the job of a protector, and yet they are handicapped, handcuffed, naked, unable to follow through, even though they want to, even though they would. I have met many security officers who have been involved in firefights and shootings and who have been shot, and they have told me straight out, it's part of my job. I'm not a hero. I did what anyone would do, and, you know, I had the ability. I had the firearm. So we need to arm those security personnel who are in harm's way. I understand that not every security officer is going to be needing to be armed, but the majority are. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when I come back from this side of the first commercial here.
Surgery after surgery, and what's going to happen next? The Wounded Warrior Project said, look, brother, everything's going to be okay. 3 months from now, 4 months from now, a year from now, you'll be fine. I don't know if I would be as well adjusted as I am now if it wasn't for them.
To learn more, call 1-877-832-6997 or visit...
34, all right, you are listening to the Private Officer Beat. We are really happy that you're with us tonight. We're going to be talking shortly about insurance, about underwriting, about the steps, the A to Z, from application to the actual proposal, to the acceptance, to the contract. That is your policy. And it doesn't matter if it's auto insurance, home insurance, business insurance, life insurance, it's all done the same way. There is an underwriting process that many people don't understand. But my friend, Sal Provenzo, will be here tonight, and we'll be talking with Sal here momentarily about the whole process. A moment ago, we were talking about arming our security personnel, giving them the tools and the training that they need to do the job to protect themselves and those that they're hired to protect. It would take me all night long to explain, you know, the whys and the hows, and we've talked about this many times before, but next week I intend on exploring this a little bit more and widening it with a few folks on the panel. We're going to be talking about why it's necessary to arm more security personnel and how to go about it to make sure that they are properly trained and that we don't have more cases of excessive force or deadly force, which unfortunately we do see, but no different than law enforcement. Trust me, they have just as many cases across the nation of bad shootings and excessive force. But we'll talk more about that next week, and it really needs to be understood and explored as to why, especially if people are saying, you know, the FBI is saying the crime is down. Why do we need more armed security? Well, we do. And that's just a fact. We need to make sure that our folks are properly equipped to do the job that they've been hired to do. Observe and report? What's that? That's something that was crazy. It was made up by insurance companies, as a matter of fact, and security company owners to avoid risk and liability. And we'll talk a little bit about that maybe in this segment here with the insurance tonight and next week for sure when we talk more about arming and equipping and training our security personnel adequately. We, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of breaking news always. If you would like to be part of the in crowd, so to speak, and you want to know everything that's happening and you want to see all of our breaking news, just go to our main website at privateofficer.com. Right there you can follow us day or night, 24 hours a day. You can check out our news blog. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. Our own forums at the Private Officer site. You can also check us out on Pinterest and the other social media sites that we have and stay on top of all of the training alerts, officer down reports, and so on and so forth. Just go to our website at privateofficer.com. You will be able to link to us right there. You can also listen any time, day or night, to our radio programs. They are cataloged, and they are on demand at iTunes and several other media formats, digital media formats, as well as right off our main website at privateofficer.com. No cost. You can listen to them 24 hours a day, and all of our programs are there, more than 300 of them, over the course of 7 or 8 years that we've been doing the program now. We've actually become very popular, and as we say often, we're listened to by friends and foes. I don't know if there's foes. I'm sure there's probably one or two. But we're listened by many, not only here in the U.S., but in many other countries, and we're expanding our format here in the next few months even larger to include a number of other types of shows and people involved, and we'll be telling you more about that in the upcoming weeks. We have, in every year in April, we have the Private Officer Awards. Now, last year something got in our way, and this year again something got into our way. We like to announce them on April the 25th. We were not able to do that. We had bad weather. We had folks here in the office that have been sick with really bad flu and viruses, and so we'll be announcing that sometime this month, but I don't have a date for you on that, and I apologize, but we'll get that announcement out there to you shortly. So, couple of emails coming in. Just want to check them real quick, and I'll get with them shortly. The 2014 security training summits are still rolling across the country, 30 cities and 20 states. We invite you and your company to get involved by sponsoring one in your area. Very low financial cost, and what you get is you get all of the media attention, you get press release, you get posted on our website, front row seats for all of your personnel, and you get to sponsor the program in your city so that other security officers can come to the program, the two-day training event, free of charge, that would not be able to otherwise. And so if you'd like more information about that, please go to our website at privateofficer.com, and right there on the front page will be more information, and you'll be able to sponsor one in your area. If you'd like more information, just send us an email at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Helpdesk@privateofficer.com. the next couple of months, some of the training segments, training summits coming up is going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. We've had to reschedule the one in Nashville, Tennessee, but we'll get that done hopefully this month. Nashville, Tennessee, Atlanta, Georgia, Washington, D.C. Metro, Florence, Kentucky, which is the Cincinnati area, and coming up in a couple of months in the Stamford, Bridgeport, Connecticut area. We've got a two-day event scheduled there, thanks to our folks up in that area and a company called Sound Training. And we also have some other ones. I'm checking out a posting that was sent to me with an update of locations. So they are still rolling in, and we have others on the board that have yet to be confirmed. So we hope to have quite a few more over the next few months. And if you'd like to, like I said, to sponsor it, just send us an email at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. There is a lot of need for the training. And as you know, training is really a sticking point for us because we know that it's not being done properly. It's not being done effectively. There's not enough of it, especially when it comes to hands-on training or skill-based training. There just isn't any requirement in any state for it other than firearms qualification. And so we're trying to increase those requirements and really prepare those frontline personnel to be able to know how to respond to all types of situations and emergencies. And that's why it's so important to do these type of things. We are celebrating our 10-year anniversary, Private Officer International. I don't have any music queued up tonight, and my cohort, Brett Davis, is ill. I'm just getting over the flu myself, so we're kind of winging it tonight. But we are celebrating our 10-year anniversary, so we're going to be doing a lot more of the training summits and a lot of other online events to help with this 10-year anniversary. Instead of getting gifts, we're going to be giving gifts continually throughout the year. So we're going to take one more quick break before getting over to my guest and our topic tonight, insurance, A to Z.
It's for my wife.
My husband still doesn't know the real story about that dent in the van.
I've never told her that I used to be a lifeguard at a nude beach.
I've never told my kids about the time I was arrested for streaking.
My friends don't know that I still sleep with my teddy bear.
But they all do know one thing about me.
And that I'm an organ donor.
That I'm an organ donor.
I'm an organ donor.
I'm an organ donor.
And that's one thing that's too important to keep a secret. Because I could save somebody's life. How cool is that?
For some children, America isn't the land of promise. It's a place where every day is a struggle. Because today, in America, one in six children lives below the poverty line. For these children, living in poverty means going without medicine, going without food, going without a warm home, or even a roof over your head. And that's life for nearly 13 million children of all races, all across America. Where will you draw the line and get involved? You can help these children and their families find a way out of poverty for good. And you can make a difference in more ways than you think. Will you help? Go to povertyusa.org today. Because one in six children in poverty is one too many. A message from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
34 All right, we are live back here on the Private Officer Beat. You're on the Private Officer Beat.
Hi, Rick.
Yes, sir.
It's Sal Provenzano.
Hey, good evening, Sal. How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hanging in there. We are live on the air right now. Appreciate you calling in. What we'd like for you to do is we'll start a little bit first on your background and what you do and a little bit about how you got into your business, and then we'll talk a little bit about insurance for security professional and go from A to Z.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Rick, and thanks for inviting me on. I am a property and casualty insurance.
Hey, Sal, go ahead and tell us your name again and where you're calling from, what area.
Okay. My name is Sal Provenzano. I work for a company called RAND Insurance. That's R-A-N-D. We are located physically in Connecticut in the Greenwich Stamford area. Our agency is a full service agency. We do property and casualty, personal lines, commercial lines, life and health. I have been focusing on the commercial line side, even though I have clients that are in all three. I'm specifically now been focusing on the security area. It's been a very challenging area for security companies to find insurance because, you know, many of the insurance companies out there are nervous about bringing on security companies because of the environment out there. They perceive it as being a very dangerous industry, which I'm sure in many cases it is. But
right. Now, when someone is interested in insurance, let's start with general liability. There's different, obviously, there's different types of insurance. But in the general liability, whether it be for, a grocer or a security company or a taxi company, the first step, obviously, is they're going to make their initial application, and they're going to submit it to the insurance provider. Now, a lot of times people make mistakes in those applications by a number of things. Sometimes they do it, because they don't know any better, and sometimes they're trying to brag when really all that's going to do is help deny their application. So let's talk a little bit about the application, if you don't mind. The application for a security business or a higher risk business, construction, that type of thing, we have to be careful on the information that we put down. We don't want it to be excessive, and we don't want to be braggatory because that actually harms our application. Can you kind of go into that application, you know, how it's looked at and what they're looking at the application for and how they decide whether or not it's even something they should send to the underwriter?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Rick. And let me just focus in on really what general liability is all about and what it covers. General liability is a insurance that you buy that will respond if your company is sued for two types of injury, either bodily injury or property damage. So those are the two things that a general liability policy will cover. So when an insurance company is looking at an application for any type of business, whether, you know, you're a window washer on a skyscraper in Manhattan, or you have a marshmallow factory, what an insurance company is looking at first and foremost is, A, what are the chances of somebody suing this person for one of those two things, a bodily injury or property damage claim? So it's kind of, they're like odds makers, you know. What is it, you know, what is the chance that something is going to happen that we're going to have to pay a claim with? The second thing that they're looking at is, if I decide to take this risk, this type of business, what should I charge them in premium? What, you know, again, getting into the odds type of situation is that, you know, if I have a company that really doesn't have a lot of exposure, I could get a policy for as little as $500 for a whole year, and you could have $2 million worth of coverage. Or on another hand, that you if you're in the construction or in the security or in a lot of more dangerous businesses, that same coverage may cost you $25,000, $50,000, $100,000. So, question, Rick, as to, you know, what should somebody put on an application? The reality is that you're absolutely right in not you should be reflecting exactly the way your business is running on that application. They're going to look for things like, you know, what are your payrolls, if payroll is a rateable factor on it. What are your sales, if sales is a rateable factor. How many security guards do you have, if that's a rateable factor. Depending upon the type of security that you offer, are your guards armed, are they not armed? What type of clients do you have? What are their specialties? These are the types of things that an insurance underwriter looks at when they're looking over an application.
Now, at a startup business, when they are submitting an application, especially if they don't have a client or business as of yet, they're giving an estimate of what their payroll is going to be, what they expect to generate in revenue for that calendar year. And I'm assuming that many times companies will estimate that their revenues are going to be higher than they really are and that their payroll is going to be higher, and that actually causes that insurance premium to be higher.
You're absolutely right, Rick, and you're kind of walking a fine line in that you don't want to down zero because you don't know what you're going to have, because the reality is that by having too little could be just as bad as overestimating. And when I say having too little, it's that if an insurance underwriter thinks that somebody is doing a business as a hobby because they're not really generating, or they're not estimating that they're going to generate a certain amount of revenue, then they're going to say, well, you know, this will be a dangerous risk because these people are not really serious in the way that they're running their business. I can tell you as a follow-up to that, and what I found in dealing with underwriters is that even if somebody is starting a new business, and even though new businesses have the highest propensity to fail, and there are the largest amount of claims in many cases within a new business, what an underwriter would need to see is the experience that person has had within the industry. So let's say one of your listeners has been working in the security industry for 10, 15 years. They've decided then to start their own company. Rather than being positioned as a green person, maybe just getting out of school and deciding to open a security company, it's very important for them to put together a resume that highlights really the experience that they've had in the security industry, companies that they've worked for, and certifications or types of things that will make the underwriter feel comfortable.
Right. Talking about underwriters at this time, some people understand the concept. They know that somebody's checking the facts, but they don't know exactly who are these underwriters. Are they the same group that underwrites all insurance? Are they employees of an insurance company? Who are the underwriters? And specifically, what are their jobs in this whole process from application to proposal?
Well, that's an excellent question again. And to me, the easiest way to describe an underwriter is an underwriter is somebody just like you and me. They could be young. They could be old. They could be working for the insurance company. They could be a contractor working for the insurance company. They could be a broker that is working to submit the claim, or I should say submit the application to an insurance company as well. So it's a mixed bag. So how do you deal with an underwriter? Well, I think the way you deal with an underwriter is that you have to understand that an underwriter has almost an impossible job. And the reason I say that is that they are engaged in many cases with getting a type of a client in that's never going to have a claim. I mean, that's the benchmark that they come up with. Even though the insurance company is there to pay claims, the underwriter is almost supposed to be perfect in that every single person that they bring in, every single company they bring in, there's going to be no chance of anything bad happening. Now, you know that that's not going to happen. That's why you buy insurance. So our job as an agent working with a client that's putting together an application, well, our job is to reflect the reality, the accuracy of the way that person is running their business or that the way that they're planning on running the business, and making the underwriter within, you know, an honest application feel comfortable that the risk that they're approving is a prudent risk. So it's not as if, you know, you're putting something together and it goes into the machine and the machine makes the decision. These underwriters are human beings like you and me. And they have managers that are looking over their shoulders to see what they're doing and why they're doing it. So that's what.
So the underwriter basically is the one who is calibrating the risk involved. Sometimes it's an educated guess, and other times it's because of a track record that they have in that particular field. But they are the ones who are evaluating whether or not this is a risk that they want to take.
Rick, you're 100% right, and I'll go one step further. It's always a gut feeling with the underwriter as to whether or not they're going to approve the risk or not. Now, there's going to be some cases where there are certain risk tolerances within the application that will knock somebody out, and you know, losses. You know, that's a big item that's looked at. I mean, if you have a security company and you're looking to place insurance, let's say you want to go to a different company, or you've been dropped by a certain company, one of the first things that the underwriter wants to see is what's called the loss history. What has happened over the last 5 years with respect to actual paid claims or even pending claims within that company? But the reality is it's always an educated guess within the underwriter once they're looking at an application that falls within those risk tolerances. And you could have three different underwriters, the same application, and one will approve it at a low premium rate, one will approve it at a higher premium rate, and one will reject it outright. Same application, three different underwriters.
Now, we've talked about how the Internet has helped those underwriters and harmed companies because of the ease at which information can be obtained these days. You know, 15, 20 years ago, most of what the underwriters had in front of them came either from statements of the applicant or, you know, from records they were able to dig up. But generally, there wasn't a whole lot of information out there. But these days, as with everything else, tell us a little bit about the underwriters, what they look at, the websites, the social media, the pictures that we talked about.
I got to tell you, Rick, you're hitting every single point that I would say that they would look at. I mean, to me, the website is probably one of the most important things that an underwriter will look at. In fact, what they normally do is that once they get an application, they may Google the name of that business if there's no website on there, just to see what comes up on a general search. Either they'll Google it or they'll Yahoo it or Bing it or whatever.
and they'll see, are there any news stories on this place? Do they have a website? Is there anything there or do they have a Facebook page? Do they have a LinkedIn page? These are all very pertinent pieces of information. Devoid of the application, and they'll go looking at it. One of the worst things that any type of company can do, be it a security company, a construction company, whatever, is to show things on your website that you don't do. And I'll give you an example. I was in the process of putting together a client, do a submission, an application submission, and they had a small construction company. And when the underwriter looked at the website of that small construction company, they ended up seeing skyscrapers and cranes on one of the pictures. And they said, there's no way we can, this is not a small construction company. So when I got back to the insured, and I said, well, what is all this, where are all these pictures of cranes? And oh, I like those pictures. They look great. I said, get those off your website. Because what you're doing is you're making the underwriter think that you're doing one thing, and you're completely not doing it.
Exactly.
Another story, which you and I had talked about, there was another construction company that was down south, and again, the application process was going through, and the underwriter went to the website and just went through and just there was a link there for events. And for whatever reason, the underwriter clicks on events. And what does he come up with? The insured put down pictures of an alligator wrestling contest that they had at their company picnic. Made them feel real comfortable about workers' comp on that one. So I have to tell you, they dropped that picture real quick.
A lot of times people don't realize that, I mean, when you make an application for insurance, the insurance company is concerned about risk and liability. That's their biggest concern. And if you have pictures, for instance, in the security industry, there are oftentimes small companies who want to make themselves look bigger. And so they include every type of service under the sun, even though they don't really provide it, but they want to make themselves look bigger to their potential clients so that they are, what they're saying is, we're a small company, but we can do it all. And that basically isn't the truth, but their pictures of armed security and armored vehicles and all of that, in the insurance eyes, that sets off red flags. And it, especially if it's a new applicant or a new application, what they're really doing is the security company is taking a big chance as to whether or not they'll be approved. But if they are approved, it's going to be a higher premium. If the security company application puts down that they have 100% armed security, obviously the likelihood of being approved is going to be less. But if they are approved, the premium is going to be much higher because the exposure, the risk, the liability is much higher when you have 100% armed as opposed to maybe 50% armed.
Yeah, I think that the takeaway, Rick, on this is that whatever you do, be comfortable in reflecting that within the application and make sure that the other collateral information that's out there, like your website or your LinkedIn page or your Facebook page, reflect that as well. Because if there are things that are out of sync on either of those things, you could be very, very disappointed, as Rick, as you said, either being denied coverage, denied a quote, or you'll be paying a lot more than you really have to because the company is anticipating more exposure than what's really out there.
On the other side of that coin, if a company submits an application and doesn't adequately address what they really do, or the fact that they do have, say, canine service, for instance, if they put down on the application, no, we don't have canine, no, we don't have armed security, no, we don't do bank security, no, we don't do nightclub security, when in fact they really do all of that, and then they do have a claim, there's a good possibility that that claim be denied completely.
Well, you make a very valid point, Rick, because, you know, insurance policies, as you know, they could be 100 pages long, right? I mean, it's essentially what an insurance policy is it's a contract. It's a legal contract. Well, in that legal contract, there are limitations of coverage, and there are exclusions of coverage as well, right? There's what's covered, what's not covered, and what are the limitations within that. Well, you know, these security companies that are trying to get a low ball bid by not reflecting exactly what they do, they could be very upset to find that this armed security is excluded. There's a claim. It's, you know, a lot of these things that they're trying to hide, that if something happens, and what happens also is that once this, you know, I mean, don't forget that, you know, a liability policy covers you for people that sue you. Well, if there's a suit there, and, you know, not only does the coverage normally cover if you're if you lose the case, but it covers your legal expenses as well in many cases, your defense costs. If you're involved in something that's not covered with the insurance because it's excluded, all of that is going to be on you personally, or at least your company, depending upon how your business is structured. So it's a very dangerous thing to try to tell the insurance company things that you do, you really don't do.
The people who have their applications denied, or that the company decides not to handle it, what would you say the reason, the bulk of the reason for those rejections are? Is it the risk is too high, the experience too low, or maybe some fraudulent information on the application?
I would say, you know, all of the above, but I would say that if you want to really just boil it down to its essence, let's get back to our friend the underwriter. And what's happened is that the underwriter feels uncomfortable with the risk. So the job of the insurance agent, insurance broker, in conjunction with the security company, is to put the information in as accurately as possible, and for the insurance agent to be able to present that to the underwriter in a way that will make them comfortable, or at least get them to the point where they can direct you to another market or another underwriter for risk. And really, that's where the difference is between the caliber and the quality of an insurance agent fall, in my estimation. I mean, my job is not to misrepresent the client, but it's to take the information and to put it in a package that it will, first of all, will go to the markets that have an appetite for that, and the ones that have the appetite to present it in its most favorable light.
Right. Now, the general liability, we all know that this is basically a coverage to protect you in case of lawsuits. But the other very important type of coverage for security schools, security trainers, security agencies, and really for any company, because it's required in most states, not all, but most, and that's workers' compensation insurance.
Correct.
And tell us a little bit how that differs from general liability. And again, this is different in a couple different ways. Obviously, workers' comp is to cover any injured employee, who's injured in the line of duty or on the job. But it's also an audited type of insurance. So tell us a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, let me just, again, you're absolutely right in that workers' compensation is required by most states. The beauty of the insurance industry, which makes it a little more complex than most others, is that we have 50 states in the union, so we have 50 sets of insurance laws. Every single state has its own insurance commissioner. So what I'm giving you, the 30,000-foot view on this, because I can't go through every single of the 50 laws. But in looking at workers' compensation essentially covers two things. It covers your workers for bodily injury, you know, any type of expenses that have to do with you know, either illness or injury, and it also covers lost wages. Okay. So those are the two things that workers' compensation covers, workers' compensation insurance. Workers' compensation is one of the few insurances where what you're paying in the year that you're paying it is always an estimated premium. Compensation premium is not fully calculated until the year the policy term is over.
And it's calculated on payroll.
It's payroll. That's why when you have a workers' compensation policy, there is an audit that is done at the end of the policy, and that is to reconcile as to whether you've underestimated your payroll or you've overestimated it. And it's, you know, if you've underestimated it, then you've got to pay an additional premium, and if you've overestimated it, in most cases you'll get either a credit, you know, toward that, because it's just, you know, it just has to be reconciled to the dollar.
Yeah, and that's why sometimes we actually tell folks it's better to give your estimated payroll a bit higher, especially in this type of business, because tomorrow we could pick up $1 million contract, we could pick up a $50,000 contract. It's a very flexible thing, and so it's better to be a little bit over than a little bit under, because at the end of the year when they do that audit, you might not have that money to make up that difference at that point. So I'd rather, you know, adjust higher and have them say, well, we actually owe you.
And I got to tell you, Rick, there's just as many people out there that feel the opposite, and that's that, well, you know, when I get the job, you know, I'll be able to pay it better, and so let me underestimate it because I don't know what's going to happen, and then they come out with an advanced, you know, I guess an additional premium audit, and then they pay it then. The only to that is that normally with workers' comp, if you're on a payment plan, then whatever you're paying, they can stretch it out over, you know, over however many payments you want to do over the year. Whereas when you owe the additional premium after the audit, in most cases, you have to pay that whole thing off at once. So, yeah, I agree with you that in many cases, you know, by maybe being a little over, you don't have to worry about then coming up with a full audit premium at the end.
Exactly. Getting back to the liability, general liability for a second, one of the things I didn't throw in there was when there is a claim, many companies believe that they're automatically going to be dropped, and sometimes they are, but when there is a claim, basically that company is going to look at a couple of things. First of all, was the company negligent? Did the company do anything shady? Did they defraud someone? What was involved? Were they a victim, or were they, you know, the guy who was doing something illegally? Do they violate any laws? And sometimes they don't drop the company, and other times they do. But there's a lot of different things that are considered before they make that decision. unfortunately, a lot of companies automatically believe that they're going to be dropped, so they either hide the claim until, you know, the claim is made, and they don't. I've always been the type of person, if I feel like there's going to be a claim, I get a hold of my insurance rep right away and say, I don't know if there's going to be one, but you might want to expect it.
Well, I think you're handling it exactly the right way. I mean, it's always, you know, it's always good to bring your insurance agent in right when you're feeling either there's an actual incident, or you think that there's going to be an incident and you want to at least report it as a possible claim. Regarding the dropping of insurance, you know, Rick, when it comes to things about either legal or illegal, that even goes beyond the scope of dropping someone. The insurance company is assuming that when a claim is put in, that it was a legitimate accident. It was something, of course, it was something that was done just within the course of business. And when you say an accident, you know, people are at fault. As long as it's not an intentional act, you know, then the insurance company in most cases, and it's not excluded, the insurance company is going to pay for it.
Exactly.
What an insurance company looks for, what I've seen in an insurance company looking at claims and determining whether or not they're going to drop someone, is the severity of the claim and the frequency of claim. Those are two things that most insurance underwriters, when they're looking at whether or not to renew a client, look at. I've seen clients that, you know, have been with other, you know, agents where the agent did not, you know, they had maybe they put claims in for $1,000 here and $800 here and whatever, and all of a sudden, within a 3-year span, they've got three claims. And the claims themselves don't even add up to $3,000. Whereas if they were counseled correctly by their agent, then they might have had the option of not putting the claim in. I mean, they could have been in a situation where they decide, you know, not to put the thing through because it was very small, and they would just allow themselves to pay it themselves. You know, these are things that if you have a relationship with your agent, and you know you talk to them and you review what your situation is, then the agent can guide you as to how to deal with different situations.
Exactly, because you know even though those claims may be small, sometimes it's the frequency of those claims that causes that policy to be canceled, because each event shows the propensity of a problem. You know,
I'll give you an example.
What's that?
No, I'll give you an example, and it's just a homeowner's example that I'll give you. I had a client that during Superstorm Sandy, right? They had a $6 million house. It was totally destroyed. And the claim ended up adding up to, between their contents, the home, the rental that they had. They had to rent someplace for a year. The claim itself was $9.5 million for one claim. Okay? They were not dropped by the insurance company. The insurance company did not drop them. Okay? Because they did not. That was basically the only claim they've had for years. Okay? I had another client that I got too late, that she was with an insurance company for their homeowners for 40 years, and they had had no claim up until the last 2 years, and they had three claims in 2 years that added up to $2,500 in total, and that insurance company dropped them. So,
right.
I'm telling you, the severity of claim in most cases is less important than the frequency of claim.
Yeah, exactly. We have a question from one of our listeners. They want to know what the term aggregate means. Oftentimes the policy will say the aggregate amount is $4 million, but then this $2 million coverage. Could you explain what that terminology means on a policy?
That's an excellent question. The occurrence is meaning if you have a policy that has a $2 million occurrence limit and you have a $4 million aggregate limit, what that means is that within any one claim, you have a $2 million limit. They're not going to pay any more than $2 million on one either occurrence, or depends on how the wording of the policy is. The aggregate means that the total insurance limit for the year, for that term, is $4 million. So let's say you have three claims within that 1 year, and it adds up to, you know, there's no one claim for more than $2 million, but it doesn't add up to more than $4 million for the whole year. That's what the aggregate is. The aggregate is almost, for want of a better term, it's almost like a bank account. Like, that's how much money is in there for the whole policy term, but you cannot have a claim, or they're not going to pay any more than that occurrence limit for any one either claim or occurrence, depending upon how the policy reads. Does that answer the
question? What if you have a situation where you have two complainants? The situation, let's say it's an assault, two people were assaulted, they file separate lawsuits. So now you actually have $4 million, each one of those could get up to $2 million each in that claim.
Well, again, it depends. It depends upon the wording of the policy.
Right.
But, you know, the bottom line is that if you have a $4 million aggregate, then in most cases, that is going to be the total limit that you have for that policy year for claims in that area. And any one of those, if it's a $2 million per occurrence, then you can't, you know, they're not going to pay any more than $2 million. Again, each policy is different. That's why I don't want to, until I read the wording of the policy, because, you know, we say that the words will set you free, I have to see exactly the way that the insurance company words it. And you know, it's funny, Rick, that you bring up this question. Most people today think of insurance as being a commodity, that all insurance is the same. And I have to tell you that there's nothing further than the truth. Between the different state laws and between the different insurance companies that have their policy forms in many cases different than than the other companies that are out there, you really need to have someone look at it and read exactly what the policy says.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a type of business, especially the security business, where there's going to be different companies who word that language differently, because obviously they want to protect themselves as much as possible. And so the language is going to be different. And also the statute in each state is different, as we said earlier. And some states require the language be clear English. And so it dictates as to how that policy is written as well. But either way, we got to have that insurance. Unfortunately, a lot of companies don't believe in it still. and, you know, unless you're so rich that you can be self-insured, insurance is something that you need, whether it be auto or general liability or workers' comp. And I wouldn't be in business without it. You know, maybe 40 years ago, 30 years ago when people wasn't so sue happy, but we're in a very litigious country, and it's just an important blanket of protection that, you know, any business really needs today.
You know, Rick, and the way I look at it is that, you know, I mean, I've got many clients, and, you know, I've got, it's really what your risk tolerance is as an individual. I've got some clients that they only take the insurance that's required by law. If by law they need workers' compensation, they will take it at a minimum, you know, minimum level. If they've got a loan and they have to take insurance out because the bank requires it, they'll take the insurance out. If they drive a car and by law they need it in that state, they'll take it out. But other than that, they're what I consider riverboat gamblers. They don't think anything is going to happen, and they'll deal with the odds. Then I have other clients that they want to insure everything. And that's impossible as well. You cannot insure everything. Every policy has limitations and exclusions. So I think all of us fall within the risk tolerance level between those two areas. It's, to me, the insurance agent, the insurance broker's job is to gauge the risk tolerance of their client's policy portfolio that meets their expectations, pure and simple.
Well, there are certain statutory requirements in our industry in most states, and because we are dealing with contracts, many of the clients want to make sure that there's a certain amount of insurance in place before they will even consider signing a contract. So in our industry, at least, it's pretty much mandatory to have specific coverage, either because of statutory or because of necessity to secure that contract. So, well, Sal, I appreciate you taking the time tonight. And before we let you go, if you'd like to give out your information, website, email address, phone number, whatever you'd like to do, be happy to do that. And also, we're going to put that in our newsletter coming up as well.
Well, I thank you, Rick. And again, you know, my name is Sal Provenzano. You can reach me. Probably the easiest thing is if you go to the RAND Insurance website. That's RAND Insurance website. We're in, you know, Riverside, Connecticut is our office. So that's the RAND that you want to go to. If you go to the website and you just go under the contact information, you can send me an email off of the website. If you want to give me a call, my direct line is area code 203-409-4640. Again, 203-409-4640. And would love to help you out in any way that I can.
Well, we'll send you as much business as we can, and you certainly have helped us out and others. And, again, I appreciate your time tonight, Sal, and we'll be talking to you again probably in the next couple of days because I have a few other questions for you.
Very good, Rick.
Thanks again.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good night, Sal.
You too.
All right. We're talking tonight about insurance and the importance of it. As we spoke moments ago about the different statutory requirements and how the language is different in every state. So general liability is something that is required in all states that license security agencies, schools, investigators, alarm service, and so forth. And it's something that's necessary. It's something that's going to protect you, whether your employee does something that they shouldn't have or whether there's a claim made against your company falsely. It will all come down to whether or not you have general liability insurance. That insurance basically is there to not only protect you from a financial loss, but also to help to cover the cost of attorneys to protect your interest should you have to go to trial for any litigation. And that general liability covers those costs. Workers' compensation, again, is something that is used to specifically pay for any employee who is injured on the job or for their loss of time. So if they're out for a month because they were shot or stabbed or fell down the flight of stairs at work, this will cover the percentage of their weekly salary so that it doesn't come out of your pocket. Workers' compensation is an audited insurance, so based on your payroll for the year, if you say, for instance, that your payroll is going to be $200,000 at the end of that year, the insurance company does audit your finances, and if they see that your payroll was actually more, then you're going to wind up with a bill for that additional coverage. Workers' compensation, extremely important. Most states, with the exception of Texas and a few others, require that you have workers' comp. Some states have a minimal requirement. Others, the amounts are much higher. So, again, it all depends on the state that you live in. And also, some states require workers' comp only if you have five or more full-time employees. It does not cover part-time. Again, it all goes back to the state that you're in, the requirements based on the statute in your state, and it's something that you need to be aware of. Unfortunately, a lot of times when companies, when individuals begin to look into owning a security company or a security training school, liability and workers' comp is something that they just don't pencil into their budget. It's something that they don't really consider. Sometimes they even try to do without it. But like I said, if it's a regulatory state that you're in and you have to apply for a license, then you have to provide a copies of your insurance as part of that license process. And so if you don't have that insurance, you don't get licensed. It is a very costly part of the business, but in the end, it's definitely worth it, especially if you do have a claim. It's important that you get good coverage and that you provide the information during the application process truthfully and be aware of what the policy states. Make sure that we read that policy, that we understand what the aggregate is, that we understand the per incident limits, that we understand what it will and will not cover, because sometimes we think it covers one thing and in fact it doesn't. It covers something completely different, and so we're paying for insurance that's not going to help us in the long run. So we have to make sure that we read that language of the policy or the proposal and understand it completely before we move forward. That's all for tonight's program here on the Private Officer Radio Network. We're glad that you have been with us, and make sure that you sign up for one of the upcoming security training summits and follow us on the web, because we'll be announcing many other locations coming up as we celebrate our 10-year anniversary. And also like just to remind you quickly here to be sure to help us by becoming a sponsor. We have so many different things coming up that we can't financially take care of this on our own. We have the memorial services coming up soon. We have several different programs happening. We're raising funds for the memorial trailer. Just a ton of different things happening. It's a huge burden on our back, and we need for you to step up and donate. You can go to our website at privateofficer.com/memorial fund. Donate there today. That's all for tonight. We appreciate you being here on the Private Officer Radio. Be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you back here on the radio.